This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
In the beginning, we had the top down, wind in our hairpins. We buckled up and buckled down, head through the tailspins. With no security, just adventure, with a will to survive. Hugging the curves with the pedal down. Stay alive, cause history is never made. History is never made. History is never made. History is never made in a straight line.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here. P2, ladies and gentlemen, on the P2 Podcast. Coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. My studio here in Fort Worth, where we talk all things music, all things P2, where things are headed, where they have been. Acting, as Kurt South once said, is that beacon in the fog, that light in the fog on the shore, guiding you through these chaotic and turbulent music times.
I think I hear a foghorn.
Yes, indeed. I think that's the train, actually, across the Erie Street back over there. Close enough. The voice you just heard, folks, is from our technical man, our man behind the scenes, who created all the Phil Pritchett websites, online stores, TrinidadWorldRecording.com, P2Tunes.com, P2Merch.com, and PhilPritchett.com. Up from Houston, Texas, once again, Kevin Haggard is here today.
Phil, I had so much fun last week, I decided to drive back up again, up 45, past the new Buc-ee's there.
And oh, you big fan of Buc-ee's?
I'm a huge fan of Buc-ee's.
You're telling me about that turkey jerky at Buc-ee's.
Oh, turkey sticks.
I can never get past the logo at Buc-ee's, the beaver, just the just that kind of dumb-looking beaver.
Phil, you mock, but you mock that which you do not understand.
I must not.
You go in there, and it's a super store of snacks.
Now, 45 is always a bit tougher for me. That Buc-ee's is new, by the way.
Yeah, I think it opened about 3 months ago.
Yeah. There's not much down 45. You'd be shocked. Once you get through North Houston, you better have gotten your Whataburger there because there ain't another one in Ennis.
Nope.
It's pretty shockingly bereft of anything. You've got some McDonald's up there a little bit, but you don't have then you get to Centerville. You get the Woody Smokehouse on both sides of the road.
Yep.
You ever stopped in there?
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's the gas station on the west side, the Shell. But on the east side is the actual kind of grocery store where you stand in line and get the barbecue where they slice the meat. Have you had that?
No, I have not had that.
Oh, man. Just white butcher paper in a tray. You just point to a rib. You point to a pork chop. You point to a brisket, and they just slice it and throw it on a plate with like a hunk of cheese and a pickle. And you're just like, oh, it's heaven. It's some onions.
You know, much like P2 and the podcast is kind of a beacon of light out there, I like to think of Buc-ee's as a beacon of food out there.
Food, burritos and sausage.
I'll give a shout out to my wife, Emily, who loves the kettle corn there.
Ah, indeed.
My
yes.
daughter, Kit.
The great Emily Haggard.
My daughter, Kit, who loves the Lay's potato chips they serve at Buc-ee's.
Kit, how old is Kit now?
Kit is three. And
Kit is three.
She will probably be listening to this podcast.
Kit,
hello,
thanks
Kit.
For listening. Hello, it's me, Phil Pritchett, the guy that comes and stays in the back house. Hello, God save the king. Kit entertains me. Every time I check out of the Haggard, we talked last week about how I'd stay at your house, in your lovely house, the room above the garage back there when we play in Houston. I never miss a chance to come in the following morning to see Kit, 3 years old, in there with maybe her violin or her guitar, and she'll come entertain me, and then she'll sing my own songs. She sings "God Save the King," and
which is a bit shocking to us.
A bit shocking. But it's good to see that. She's just cute as she can be. I still got that picture of me holding her at Ziegenbach that year. Gosh, she must have been like one.
I don't even think she was one then.
8 months old or so.
Yeah.
Oh, what a sweetie. Well, hello, kid.
It's good to know you have a new generation of fans.
That's right. That's right. Always coming on. Well, man, Kevin, I was curious, and I probably know some of the answer to this, but not really. Kevin, now how did you, before we get into how you learned about Phil Pritchard and the full band, you're from Seattle.
From Seattle.
I want to know this. Here's what I want to know, folks. See, I was in the Catholic Church, a lot of times people who convert to Catholicism are more ardent Catholics than the ones who were born Catholics.
Yes.
In any faith, I'd assume that to be true. You know, because you really make a conscious decision as an adult that you're going to be whatever. I'm going to become Jewish, or I'm going to – and you study the faith. You become – and let me tell you what. No one has – you are not born in Texas.
Nope.
From Seattle. And so you – adopted the faith of Texas music, songwriting, and man, I have never seen a more ardent defender of the faith of Texas music than Kevin Haggard. How did that all start? I want to know.
You know, it's interesting. I'll give you the condensed version because I could probably talk at length about this. But last name's Haggard, very similar to Merle Haggard. A lot of people give my dad and I cassettes of Merle Haggard as a joke, and we actually liked them, and I enjoyed the country music. And I got to college in Washington, D.C., and one of my... Georgetown University.
Hello, Hoyas.
Hello, Hoyas. One of my good friends there, guy Garrett Hall, out of Austin, Texas.
Texas guy.
Texas guy. Gave me a tape, which had Jerry Jeff, Chris Wall, Robert Earl Keen, a number of other musicians on it.
Stuff you've never heard before.
Stuff I'd never heard, and it was like I opened Pandora's box.
Just a part of your brain was
I couldn't put that back in. It was, I heard Jerry Jeff.
Would he come back and like check in on you and be like, dude, are you all right? I mean, would you just be night and day listening to it? I mean, obsession?
I would say it was an obsession. I moved to New York after school and spent so much time scouring record shops trying to find obscure Willie Nelson CDs, Jerry Jeff CDs.
Ray Wiley Hubbard, Fromholtz.
Yeah. Oh, just enjoyed it. And actually, it brought me to Texas to live.
Would those guys come to New York? You sometimes run across them?
Oh, goodness. You know, a great show was
Tramps.
Tramps.
Yeah, it was an old
Jerry
place
Jeff
up there.
Walker. I remember distinctly February of 1994, I think.
Right.
And I was talking to a guy before the show.
Is that the first time you'd ever seen Jerry Jeff?
No, you know, right after college, my roommate and I decided we wanted to go see Jerry Jeff live. So we hopped in the car in Washington, D.C., drove to the Golden Triangle to the Port Arthur Music Festival to see Jerry Jeff Walker.
Wow.
So it took us about 2 or 3 days to get there and got there, saw Jerry Jeff, turned around, drove back. And that was the first time. And then actually decided I wanted to live in Houston and live in Texas. Here I am today.
Here I am. Man, the music brought you here, literally.
Brought me here.
That's amazing. Golly.
Then the question is, how did I come to listen to Phil Pritchard and the full band?
Indeed. Here you are, this country. You've been baptized in the waters of Jerry Jeff Walker, Ray Wiley Hubbard, Chris
Guy
Wall.
Clark.
Oh, Towns. Steve Earle. The book is open. So where were you where you somehow caught on to us?
It was about 1998, I think. I was on a Jerry Jeff Walker email list.
Right.
And someone was sending around a list of the top 10 Texas live albums everyone must own.
Right.
Number 3, number 4 on there, Phil Comes Alive. since I love the live album, I went out and got
Texas
it immediately.
Texas guy, hey, how can you go wrong, right?
And it just kind of, you know, much like Blake Walker says, you just listen to it and it's awesome. It's awesome music, makes you feel good. Yeah. Everybody, you can get Phil Comes Alive at p2tunes.com for only $4.
As always.
And listen to that. I thought, this is great. I mean, you know, they're fun songs. They're serious songs. You know, then I think I got Heritage Way and, you know, thought about it for a little bit.
Confused.
But then picked up some of the others and you know, just from there.
Yeah, followed along. Right.
Oh, I still remember my first Phil Pritchard show.
Where was that?
That was, you played the Continental Club solo. An 8 o'clock show midweek in Houston.
I was opening for somebody.
Opening for somebody.
No, or was I? It just opened.
You know what I think it was?
It was a brand new.
They sometimes do 2 or 3 shows a night. There's no openers. Just so and so is playing at 8. So and so is playing at 10. So and so is playing at midnight.
Midnight. Yeah, yeah. And David Beebe, my friend, the great former frontman of Banana Blender Surprise, opened that bar.
Yep.
And he'd contacted me about a show. And I really didn't have anyone. That was one of my first Houston gigs ever.
Well, at that point, were you still – this would have been 2000 or 2001. Were you coming back from Nashville or
– Somewhere around there. And we were playing a place called the Velvet Elvis a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Remember what that was?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We had some great shows there. Now, that might have been like late 90s.
Yeah.
Just a few, Velvet Elvis. Wow. Yeah, man. That was a good room, man. A good, tight little stage, small bar. Oh, it was great. The guy that booked it was really cool. I forget his name.
Yeah.
Ryan something. Anyway, yeah, so the Continental Club there in Houston.
Great story. So I emailed you beforehand. I had a little DAT player. I thought, well, I'll record the show. You know,
right.
Because that way it's Phil Pritchard. I enjoy his music.
Sure.
So I got there early. I plugged into the soundboard. The guy said, I'm not sure his guitar is playing through the board, but go ahead and record it. Mm. So I did. Mm. And then I got home that night. I was excited. All right, I'm going to listen to a Phil show.
Mm.
No guitar.
All of those.
Just a voice coming at me. Ethereal,
yeah.
Creepy, just
yeah.
Singing songs, no instruments.
No instruments. Yeah, I think my amp was just turned up on the stage.
Yeah,
it wasn't in the mains, maybe. Oh, that's funny, dude. God, he must have been the only guy there.
No, I brought someone with me, so I think there were two of us.
Two of us?
Yeah.
Good. And my friend Tom Warren was there, I think. And that was it. Yeah, we played the Continental Club. So that was your first Phil show.
First Phil show.
Did you go see us other shows there?
Oh, yeah,
here
definitely.
And there?
Definitely. You played at Fitzgerald's, I think, a couple times.
Oh, man, yeah.
Firehouse.
Did you ever go to those small room shows in Fitzgerald's? The downstairs room?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We had a couple neat shows down there.
Oh, don't forget the Mucky Duck. I was there for the 2001
live
October
recording.
Stages. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was great.
That was cool. And then the next time, of
course.
What are
all these people doing sitting down in here?
I know.
The line, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we did, and then you caught up with us when we did the famous, infamous, Cool Unusual Punishment bus ride care package.
The sponsorship tour.
Sponsorship tour. Pritchett decides that, why should I pay for an album when I can just have my fans help out and provide fun, access, and many memories for your entire life.
Many memories would be the key
optimum
element.
Phrase.
Yes.
The optimum phrase. So we have a we talked about this one other time. It was $100 for CD. You get the custom T-shirt and you get to say hi to us before the gig and an autograph poster.
Right.
Something like $100. $250 was all that stuff plus a little party after the show on a couple shows or something like that. And then there was a $500 package where you get to ride on the bus with the band for 2 days or for a show or two or something. So that was it. And my inkling was, man, we'll just get a couple of the hundred. We'll sell a couple of the hundred ones maybe, and that'll be it. And interesting, we sold several hundred, more than I thought. No 250. I don't think you're either barely in or you're all in. The 250 didn't have any takers, and then we did have, you know, two or three go all in. The
right.
First one, of course, as soon as I posted it, ding, $500 from
right.
a Kay Haggard in Houston, and the band was horrified. So it was a deal where I was like, man, who is this guy? All of
what,
a sudden,
what if he's
this
weird?
This guy could be a mass murderer or something. He's going to be rising, be sleeping on the bus. What have I done here? We don't even know this person. This could turn out bad. What if he's just a total jerk or he's just
And it's the same thing I was thinking.
What
if Ryan Lynch beats me up?
Yeah.
What if Stallie steals my wallet? Yeah.
If you really think about it, it's something that really shouldn't be practiced or would work very well. Well, lo and behold, Kevin walks on. He's just very...
Just my backpack. I think I wore the same clothes all weekend. It was...
Where did we pick you up? I don't even remember.
You picked me up at DFW. I flew in from Houston. You guys drove the bus up. I was just standing there with my backpack, and I hop on the bus, and we head down 35 to College Station.
We were playing Chili Fest.
Chili Fest.
Is that where we were? Okay. Wow. Goodness gracious.
So I got on the bus. I think there was trepidation on both sides. You know, it's like there was... All you guys and Jordan sitting there kind of, who is this guy? Why would he pay money to ride a bus with us?
Yeah.
And I was thinking the same thing. Are these guys going to be rock star prima donnas? And,
yeah.
You know, am I going to have to be cleaning out the toilet or, you know?
Yeah. Just be hazed by the full band.
Yeah, hazed. And lo and behold, I had a great weekend.
It was a great time.
Living the rock star lifestyle.
Man, we were just going up and down the highway on the bus. We had the video games going. We had some beers in the fridge. And you must have been pleasantly surprised. It was a little bit, a little tame, just a little more like hanging out with the guys kind of deal.
Which is, there was no, you know,
no sinister element with the full band.
It was,
sorry to disappoint everybody out there. Pretty normal. Of course, like we stayed up, played some cards, drank some beers.
Well, I think what amazes
great time.
You know, and you experienced this more than anybody, but amazed me about the rock star lifestyle is it's waiting. Man, you are just waiting all the time. It's waiting for your sound check time, waiting for, you know, when's your turn on stage, waiting for the bus driver to wake up. You know, it's always waiting. It's, you know, not necessarily as much rock and roll as you think. So the rock star lifestyle, you know, we experienced elements of it. I think after you guys were done at Chili Fest, I think Jordan Powell said, well, hey, I think Jack Ingram's playing at Hurricane Harris.
Yeah, that's right. He was that night.
Let's go over there.
Rolled over there. And,
in the bus.
Rolling in the bus, dude.
Rock star right
there.
Oh,
it was so great. And so fantastic.
We catch the last three or four Ingram songs.
Yeah.
And then we head backstage. And I'm thinking, how great is this? You know, number one, I'm hanging out with Phil Pritchard and the full band. Then we go.
Of course, as they clear off the stage, I just kind of nudge you and just go, come on, let's go. We just walk across the stage, right up backstage.
Right up backstage.
You must have just thought, dude, the keys to the kingdom have just been thrown wide.
Jack Ingram, you know?
Yeah, you know, there he is.
Who's this guitarist?
Jack and
the old Jens.
Yeah, the Jens German guy. Pete Coatney, of course.
Oh, it was.
I think Robert Kearns on bass.
Yeah.
Didn't he and Staley have a wrestling match or something weird that night?
There was a lot of weird things going on.
For those of y'all who don't know, Hurricane Harry's College Station, they've got this really big backstage area with a bunch of nice leather couches.
Probably seated 16, 17, 18 people.
Yeah, TVs. Yeah. It's really, really
Lots
nice.
Lots of beer was there.
Lots of beer. And, man, we just all sat in there and talked to Jack and shared war stories and stuff. And it was a ball, man. That's always a great time to just sit down after a show with somebody. And it is sometimes weird when you play with somebody like Keen or Jack or you know, someone you've watched for a lot of years that you know has played some badass gig and you sit down with them after show and you just it's always reassuring to me because man everyone we all have the same experiences you know there's always so much to talk about they right. played the same towns the same venues oh is that guy still booking that place oh man we used to play that place man one time we were there's such a it's an unbelievable common language out there that you forget is there. It's easy for me to look at Ragweed or Pat Green or some guy. It's like, oh, I just kind of knew him back. We spent a lot of time together back then. And boy, you see him somewhere and you start talking and it's almost like college or something. Like, you know, he's like, well, I haven't seen that guy in a lot of years, but as soon as you see him, you just pick up right where you left off.
We have so many shared experiences.
So many shared experiences, and they remember things you don't, and it's always a blast, man. I love going to other guys' shows if I'm in town or something. Man, making an effort to swing over there. Every time we play a festival or something in Houston, who's at the Firehouse? Because it is always fun. We've had some great night going over there to catch the very end of a Max Stalling show or a Honey Brown show or Wade Bowen was there one night. I mean. You're just rolling there watching somebody else play and hanging out. It's always so much fun. It's a good unspoken. It's kind of like a fraternity. It's like being a Mason or something. You know what I mean? It's like some sort of a secret society you're privy to. But very, very fun. So that's what you got on the bus.
That's what I got. I got the full band experience.
For $500. I hope it was worth it.
Yep.
Here you are today.
I told you I would have paid double.
You would have paid double? I was like, oh, what? $1,000 to ride with Pritchett and hang out? Well, maybe that was an extra bonus. That wasn't part of the deal, going to hang out with Jack Ingram all night.
Well, I had to give Jack, I think, $200. He asked for it.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So if you're not paying Phil, pay me.
Yeah.
He's a good businessman, Ingram. Yep. I'm telling you what. Well, that has been catching up with how Haggard came to be in the heart of this belly. In the belly of the beast of Texas music.
Hopefully that's interesting to somebody.
It is interesting. It's interesting to me. I wanted to hear it. I didn't know the story. Man, it's great to see someone, Texas music, just take hold of somebody who lives in Seattle, Washington, of all places. Going to school on the other coast, Washington, D.C., and just see Jerry, Jeff, and Keen and stuff just transcend and even bring you and your family to where you live now. Houston, Texas, man, to where our old friend Towns and Guy Clark and everybody started out playing the old quarter. Well, 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 we're going to get into our next segment here. What was on the docket for segment two?
I think we were going to talk about what bands do when they're not with their band. So they do side projects.
Oh, yes, the side project deal.
Concept albums.
Now, this is always something fun to talk about because every time we talk about hanging out with Ingram and other bands, we do always kick around different various side projects. We will get into side projects, concept albums, how an artist expresses himself, maybe not in his current band. Good idea or bad, we'll talk about that in the next segment.
I saw a picture of you and me when we were younger. Still amazed how those days were numbered. Not making money, just history, one day at a time. We took the straight road to glory, but it started to whine, 'cause history is never made. 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 In a straight line.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Trinidad World Recording Studios, call me, 817-733-5256. I will answer and tell you that, yes, we will come play at your wedding, graduation, backyard barbecue, you name it. We do it all the time. Just ask Will Haley in Houston, Texas, who turned 30 years old. And what did he have us do, Haggard? You were there.
Oh, he played a blowout birthday. Oh,
right by the swimming pool.
People swimming while
oh
Phil and the band
gosh,
are playing.
It was outstanding.
It was only about, you guys were standing in about 110 degree heat, and everyone else is frolicking in the cool water.
Oh, but it was great, though. Such a good time.
I don't know how Stu ended up under the shade and
yeah,
everyone else
I know.
Was in
he
the...
Yeah, he was. I was out in the blazing sun. But, we do it all the time. So keep that in mind, man.
And Children's birthday parties?
Children's birthday parties. Yeah, we do that as well. We do it all. Or come record. You've written a few songs. Oh, I'm not that good of a singer, I'm no good. Phil wouldn't be interested. Hogwash, call me. Trinidad World Recording, we record everybody. We make good stuff wherever it may be. Kevin Haggard is my guest here, up from Houston, Texas. Kevin handles all of our website, all those cool little Pritchett things you get on the site to download our stuff for just $4, free MP3s, archive.org, etc. Well, we were talking about the intriguing possibilities of, when I hang out with bands, other musicians, we always fantasize and talk about some kind of a side project.
A super group.
Now, I'm ashamed to say that I have failed in this regard. But we did get close at one point. It was going to be me, Alex Whedon, who great guitar player and a childhood friend of mine who played guitar for Honey Brown for a lot of times. Wrote those really good Honey Brown
and
songs.
Miranda Lambert now?
Now he plays for Miranda Lambert. Yes, indeed. Alex and I have known each other for a long time. He's a great guitar player. Then we were going to get Jeremy Plato from Cross Canadian Ragweed on bass and Cody Canada. And Alex Whedon. So we were going to change. wait a minute. Who am I missing? Stolly was going to be the drummer. Stolly Whedon, Plato Canada Pritchett. So we were going to call it Poly Canadian Phil Whedon. Five-piece band, and we're going to do all Led Zeppelin and stuff. And so that was as close as I ever got. Me and Whedon had it figured out for a little while. It was one of those things that was like a great idea for like a week, then we kind of forgot about it.
Or even just one night backstage is a great idea.
Yeah, so dude, yeah. Poly Canadian, combining Plato and Stolly, Poly Canadian Canada, Phil Whedon, Poly Canadian Phil Whedon. And it was going to be, just playing hard rock. Because, Ragweed likes to play the rock and roll like I do. And Alex Whedon knows his rock and roll very well. So that was a side project. Who knows? Maybe it'll still happen. Much like a lot of Wilco fans out there, Jayhawks, some of their keen elements, Jeff Tweedy and Gary Loris from the Jayhawks have formed a Golden Smog.
Brilliant albums out
cool.
there.
Cool. They got some good Golden Smog albums are great. So look for that out there, folks. No, Golden Smog.
I think they have some live shows out there for download on the internet.
Do they? Have they played Golden Smog shows one a year? They'll go play one a year?
Yeah, I think if you do some digging around there, I think you'll find something.
See, that's the kind of, and hear me out there, any of you musicians out there, if you're, the more famous you are, the better your chances of being in this band. Make no mistake. So Phil is looking to form a side project. We're going to make a record here at Trinidad, and then we're going to play one show a year. That's it. That's the band. That's the only commitment necessary.
It's kind of like Brigadoon. You just appear once every
Yes. year. It's just a happening. Once a year, we'll go to wherever, the Firehouse or the Granada Theater or something, and we'll say, hey, this is a show, you know, here. And then, yeah, we'll do our new songs and some of our old ones. You know, of course, pull a couple Pritchett songs in, a couple of whoever we got, Ragweed song or whoever. And so, man, I'd love to do the side project. The side project is intriguing. How so?
Well,
who are some other side projects you know of besides Golden Smog?
Well, there's an interesting one. I don't think they've recorded anything. Hayes Carl and John Evans.
And they have a side project?
They call it the Ego Brothers.
Okay, the Ego Brothers.
And I think they have some songs.
I think Evans told me about this one time.
A couple of songs.
Me and Hayes, man, we're just doing shit, you know? It's nuts.
I think they have more titles than they do actual songs, like Something Smells Good in Here, I Think It's Me.
Yeah.
just some interesting song titles like that. That's a good mix. You know, one I've been listening to recently is The Monsters of Folk. Which is Jim James from My Morning Jacket.
Right.
What's his name? Connor
Oberst, the Bright Eyes guy.
From Bright Eyes.
Yeah.
A couple other guys in
there.
Is
it serious or is it kind of jokey?
Oh, it's serious. I mean, you know, they were on Conan O'Brien. I guess that's serious. And what I think that's nice about a side project, or you look at someone like Jack White. How many bands has that guy had?
His career is side projects.
And I think, you know, I'm not an artist, but I think as an artist, it frees you from the compartment you're in.
Right.
Phil Pritchett and the full band. I think you've managed to kind of do a number of side projects inside of the Phil Project.
Right.
Or Phil Pritchett
Heritage Way was a side project.
It's very much a side project. But, you know, I think if you are AC/DC, hard for you guys to go do a acoustic album.
Indeed.
Yeah. Or if you're, you know, Jessica Simpson, hard for you to go do a country album.
That's right.
I think it does.
That's an interesting point. If you do have some notoriety out there, the more success you have, the more necessary maybe for a real artist to have a side project, because that brand, of Wilco or whatever, is a certain thing. Robert Earl Keane.
Well, your fans want to see that.
Robert Keane, he might wake up in the middle of the night and write something like Highway to Hell. And he's just like, man, this is great, but it's not going to fit on Farm Fresh Onions.
Yeah.
You know, so... I'm not saying Keen is looking for a side project, but I'm a little bit different, I think, because I've never had some sort of ubiquitous recognition to where I feel any pressure to put out a Phil Pritchett sounding album.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that could be almost anything. Maybe not, though.
But it would be interesting, you know, let's start like Miranda Lambert. It'd be interesting to hear you guys do an album together.
Another good one was Norah Jones did the Little Willies.
Yeah.
That was another really good side project. The great, you know, Norah Jones, great jazz singer. Who else was in that deal? Do you know? I don't know who the other musicians were.
I don't remember.
Kind of some country dudes, like a Dobro guy. And it was some Texas people, though.
Yeah.
Some Austin dudes. But, yeah, it's just some country stuff. Did some covers and all kinds of cool things.
You know, like Reckless Cut, the Braun Brothers. They do a couple things there.
What are they called?
The Rock Farmers. Did they do some of the Rock Farmers?
Rock Farmers, yeah.
You know, it's just the voice, I think, is such an important part of listening to a musical act.
Mm-hmm.
So throwing in a couple different voices that you haven't heard together, mm-hmm. I think it's very, you know.
It is.
It challenges
it's
you as a listener.
And it frees the artist to do some weirder stuff.
Yeah.
See, I also do not benefit from having the Blueprint Garage series, because I can put some jazzy instrumentals on there and stuff. I told you we already got our Blueprint Garage Volume 3 kind of in the can. Some real atmospheric, more kind of...
I got a preview of that today.
Yeah, Pink Floyd kind of stuff, you know, that I'll sit in here and work on with no lyrics, but just sort of really experiment with some guitar sounds and organs and drums. And, you know, I just kind of throw it out there. That's kind of my... I get that sort of release, I guess, with that releasing all my rarities and outtakes. And, you know, so it's harder maybe for me. Me and Ryan Lynch did once kick around forming a U2 tribute band.
Ooh.
About 2002.
What era? Early or kind of Zeropa?
I don't know if we're thinking about doing like the costume changes, come out with the spiky hair in the 80s.
Nice.
I Will Follow Sunday Bloody Sunday with the flag, then come back into like an Octoon Baby kind of era,
yeah.
And then do like a modern era we were just going to switch the two and the U and just call it 2U. It's just for the fans. 2U, the U2 tribute band. Don't steal that idea.
Look for that on p2tunes.com.
I was going to be Bono, of course. Then we were going to have wouldn't that be fun? I mean, just to put on those glasses and just take a mic and just go play U2 songs and just be just a complete that's a lot of fun.
You know, think of it. If you're a teacher and you teach history your whole life,
right?
Wouldn't you want to just go teach English once or art once? Just right. To you know, you're still doing the teaching skills, but it's forcing you to expand your mind, to learn something else, to be able to communicate a different
right.
way. You know, whether that is a side group or whether that is something entirely different, like a concept album.
Right, right.
You know, I think about concept albums. I think we talked last week when I was here about the Drive-By Truckers.
Right.
They did
Southern Rock Opera. Yeah.
Wow. That was the first album by Drive-By Truckers I got.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I thought they poured their heart and soul in this. They're telling a story, mm-hmm. you know, from start to finish. It ties together musically, lyrically. Another one, you know, when I was in high school, I listened to Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
Joe's Garage.
Concept album.
Concept album.
You can jam at Joe's Garage.
You know, tells a story
for
throughout.
A lot of beer and a couple of pints of beer.
Tommy, you know.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
Concept
yeah.
album. I mean, what do you think if Phil Pritchett wants to do a concept
You know,
album?
I think about it all the time. I think all my albums are concept albums.
but to tell lyrically a story, would it be
like more
Maria,
of an opera kind
Spain?
Of deal?
Would it be?
Gee whiz. You know, there's something unavoidably pretentious about putting out the concept album. Not in a bad way, but it needs to be overcome, I think, when you do a concept album. You're demanding a lot of the listener
yep.
by saying, hey, not only do you have to listen to the whole thing, you got to listen to it in order to get it. It's kind of like, oh, geez, you know, it's kind of a... Is that really what people want? Some hour-long experience that they have to sit down and live through for 2 hours? They just want a couple good songs, you know. I don't know. I mean, now you're a music enthusiast, yeah. So you're the wrong guy to ask.
Well, you know, I'm a huge Jerry Jeff fan, and to tie him back into this podcast.
Has he done concept
albums?
Well,
he did, probably 2001, he did Jerry Jeff Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
So he did a bunch of jazz standards that his parents listened to.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I love Jerry Jeff.
Uh-huh.
His music, everything he does, that to me was kind of unlistenable in
mm-hmm.
a way. I respect what he was trying to do. I bought the album.
Yeah.
But you're right. I listen to Jerry Jeff because I expect a certain type of music. I listen to Phil Pritchett because I expect a certain
sure.
type of music. If you but all
if,
of a sudden
if Jerry,
did,
but if Jerry Jeff hooked up with Harry Connick Jr. and Elvis Costello and did it.
And they all met halfway in the middle, kind
yeah.
of a mix of everything. That would be
you
awesome.
You know something? You think
yeah.
so? Yeah,
I think it can't be going too far in one direction. Mm-hmm. I think the perfect side project needs to meld two genres, two artists together to kind of, you know, 1 + 1 = 2.
Right, right, right.
And if it's, you know, like Corey Morrow and Pat Green did the one where...
That's a good example,
But they each did one song, and then the last song...
But man,
that
record was huge because it was a novel idea for two guys to get together and do songs they like.
Yeah.
And, oh man, they both got a lot of mileage out of that. I mean, that's definitely an example of... two individuals getting together and the sum is greater than its parts.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, it was people, everybody had that and was talking about it and what a great idea and what a unique thing it was. So, I think there's some legitimacy to it. And you look back, I mean, all those old Willie and Waylon, they'd be on each other's albums. I mean,
Redheaded Stranger.
They're just be, they're
concept.
Just, they're this concept album, but you got infinite albums with just Willie and Waylon on the cover. Willie and Waylon and the boys and
or the Outlaws.
You have those things, but with, all bunch of guys on there, you know. So who knows? Should we have like a Kurt South, Phil Pritchett, Cody Canada album? Just all of us looking rugged on the cover and
why not
do a bunch of songs?
Give yourself a weird name like the Dead Weather or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, right. Is that Jack White's band?
Yeah, that's Jack White.
The Dead Weather. Yeah, yeah, that's right. He plays drums in that too, doesn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. I think he does. Of course, he's also got the Raconteurs.
Yeah.
Jack White, the White Stripes. Man, he's just got a. His whole life is side projects.
Good. We should talk another topic for another time. Is the it movie? Is.
Oh yeah.
With
it
the
might
edge
get loud. And,
yeah,
it might get
boy.
Loud.
For those of you looking to add something to your Netflix list, add it might get
Is it out yet on Netflix?
No, you know, add it early. Add it early. Get in the queue early.
Get in the queue early.
The Edge.
Right. Jack White.
Jimmy Page.
Jimmy Page. Outstanding stuff, huh?
It was good in the big screen.
Oh, I meant to go see it. I just never made it out there. And regret it. Deeply regret it. So the concept album, man, I don't know. I feel like High Tide in the Heartland or Suburban Legends were very concept albums, but not literal. You're talking like Southern Rock Opera or Tommy are operas.
You have to read them through start to finish.
Right. Now, Redheaded Stranger, I don't know if you'd quite call that a concept album like you would Tommy.
Well, Terry Allen, I think we talked about this one time. He did the album Lubbock on Everything.
Yeah.
And it kind of ties its way through. Mm-hmm. You know, so that there's a kind of a happy medium between Tommy, a regular album. It's kind of like a Redheaded Stranger or Lubbock on Everything, where it just there's a thematic tie to all the songs.
Right.
You don't necessarily need to listen to it start to finish to understand.
Right.
It.
And then maybe some musical tie-ins that are the same that come back around and tie things together.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah, man, it'd be an undertaking to do a concept album.
Or even, you know, think about Step Inside This House by Lyle Lovett.
Yeah.
I mean, that.
Oh, that's a.
Would you call it a concept album or what you call it? I mean,
jeez.
I think that's an album I'd like to see from you guys. You know,
yeah.
Choose your favorite artist. So here's an Elvis Costello song. Here's a Tom Petty song.
Right.
Put that all together. These are the songs that really, you know, inspire me and drive me, because that lets me know as an artist what inspires you musically.
Right.
And then that maybe connects your fans to those artists who they hadn't thought about. Like the people we talked about last week who maybe didn't know Townes Van Zandt until they heard Lyle Lovett cover it.
That's right.
Then they go back and research, you know, the catalog further. So
that's right.
Not only is it a project for you, it's a project for your fans to discover new artists.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's a,
to share your influences with your audience is really all
might
you're
be
doing.
Might be an interesting album.
That would be interesting. Well, we got our own studio here, so let's get cracking. What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for, Haggard?
I'm just waiting for your Jerry Jeff Walker covers.
That's right. A tribute to JJW. Well, speaking of our old friend JJW, Jerry Jeff Walker, the reason Kevin Haggard discovered Texas music, fell in love with Texas music, he's going to be a topic in the vault today.
Kurt South, you might want to fast forward
Kurt
on this part.
Kurt South, get up out of your bed. Arise. Arise. Get up off the floor. Wipe your mouth and just, you know, crawl out the door away from earshot of this next segment, because we're going to talk about Jerry Jeff Walker. Because I'm telling you what, when I went to college, this album played constantly. I mean, just constantly. And I thought it was a new record when I first was kind of hearing it. Wasn't until late, what year was it, 72 or something?
Oh, I don't remember.
Viva Terlingua. And I'm always shocked that, you know, you do get in these college towns and play, and it's not their fault, bless their hearts, these kids in who go to Tech and A&M, you know, they weren't around for a lot of that stuff. So you can play.
They weren't even born.
Well, yeah, they weren't even born. So you're playing, you know, Sangria Wine, or you're playing Corpus Christi Bay by Robert Earl Keen, and they kind of shrug and go, I don't even know what that is. Do you know any Randy Rogers? Play some Stoney LaRue.
Come on, kids.
That's their point of reference.
Yeah.
And you think about, man, Stoney and Randy, those guys are new. Well, think again. They've really been around 6, 7, 8 years back when that kid was 8 years old or something. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. So, yeah. Man, when I was in college, Viva Terlingua, dude, we just threw it on. And I must have bought that album 10 times, really. And what a great album.
I must have 10 copies of it.
Yeah, oh, I know. Yeah. You give me, I think I got 4 copies of it on vinyl over there now. There was like 10 in that stack you gave me. So Viva Terlingua, Jerry Jeff Walker. What a great live. Is it live record or kind of live? Was he just recording it at some of it's live?
Some, I think there are a couple tracks on there that are live.
Actual at a show.
Yeah.
And then,
we can get more into the recording of it. I'll talk all day about it.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Viva Terlingua, the great Jerry Jeff Walker album, live record, or whatever it was, ubiquitous Texas music record, in the vault next.
Live, buckaroos. Scamp Walker time again. Yeah, I'm trying to slide one by you once more. Don't matter how you do it. They say, just do it like you know it. And I've been down this road once or twice before.
Bill Pritchard here, everybody. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. E2 Podcast here. Thank you for listening at philpritchett.com and on radiofreetexas.org. Man, folks, we have an exciting record in the vault today. Me and Kevin Haggard, our technical man, our man behind the website, our man of technology. Thanks for coming up today, Kevin.
Happy to drive up, especially to talk about a topic like this.
The whole reason you live in Texas, the whole reason you didn't move here for a job or for your wife or a woman, nothing. You moved here
for because Jerry of, Jeff Walker.
For Jerry Jeff Walker. That, how many people can say that?
Not many, and that does sound a little weird when I hear it out
sound
loud.
A little, well, now it's been recorded. There it is.
Well, you know, here's the
should
thing.
I retract the statement? It's true.
If you love to ski, you move to Colorado.
That's right, yeah.
If you
yeah.
love to listen to Jerry Jeff Walker.
You love the beach, you move to Hawaii or Florida, right?
If you love the Jerry Jeff Walker, you're not going to move to Vermont. You're going to move to Texas.
That's right. But you have to love country music, Texas music, Jerry Jeff Walker quite a lot. Yes. And you do.
Yes.
And move down. Well, there is no more, at least from my perspective, and I don't know how this sits in the pantheon of true Jerry Jeff fandom, but this was the album, maybe a lot of people who hear Phil Comes Alive, the early live album is kind of the, you know, what people hear first. And this, while the whole thing's not live, like with an audience live, boy, this was just the huge, gigantic Jerry Jeff Walker album.
This is for the
generation that came after.
This is what you give people if you want to know what was Jerry Jeff Walker in the 70s like. This is the album that is easily digestible, has hits, and I think is a great representation of what the music is all about.
Songs people know. Oh, man, just the whole intro of that. Now, it says on here, I've always been intrigued by this because songs like Up Against the Wall, Redneck Mother, London Homesick Blues, there's definitely an audience cheering in the background. And you think of Viva Tu Lengua, and on the cover they've got the flyer, you know, $1 per person, Luckenbach, Texas. It's got I always think of it as a live album.
Yeah.
And it says recorded live in Luckenbach. We were just listening through it. Really, a lot of these songs, I think they were recorded live. And Luckenbach, just like it
says.
There
was a mobile truck that wheeled up there, ran the cables in.
But really only Redneck and Homesick Blues have an audience in the room, like from maybe the show that night. So I'm assuming they recorded some of these in the little general store in the dance hall when no one was in there. Because it sounds great. I mean, but it's not people yelling and smashing beer bottles.
You know, it's funny, if you go on eBay and you want to buy this album, so many people mistakenly say live Jerry Jeff 1970s album for sale.
They haven't
probably ever listened to it, but
right.
it sounds like a studio. My guess is the live part of it is they just mic'd the band and everyone just kind of played the song, you know, start to finish.
Yeah, it just says recorded live, Luckenbach, Texas, August 1973.
And what a great band. The funny story, a couple weeks ago, I saw the Los Gonzo Band.
Yeah.
At the Do-Si-Do Coffee House in the
Still
Woodlands,
led by
Texas.
Gary P. Nunn, or was he not there?
It was Gary P. Nunn,
yeah.
Bob Livingston, and John Newman on guitar. Herb Steiner playing pedal steel.
Oh, of course.
I mean, just absolutely outstanding. Recorded live, August 1973.
So Mickey Ruffeld
on harp.
Is that Mickey Raphael?
I think so. There's a lot of misspellings
different
on here.
Different spellings? That's weird.
They misspelled Ray Wiley Hubbard as the songwriter for Up Against the Wall, Redneck.
Ray Wiley Hubbard. Well, no, it seems...
No, he's W-Y-L-I-E.
Oh, misspelled, yes.
Not Stuart Wiley, which is a different spelling altogether.
Indeed. Yeah, there are some misspellings on here. Interesting.
But
Desperados. Is that what it's called? I thought it was Desperado Waiting on the Train.
You know, there's different, you know, sometimes you see up against the wall.
Redneck Mother.
You just see up against the wall, in parentheses, right. Redneck Mother. Sometimes right. It's just up against the wall. Sometimes you see Redneck Mother.
Yeah, all different kinds of spellings and everything.
You never know. The important thing is the music is out there. And track one, side one.
Yes, kind of getting by.
It's a ubiquitous Jerry Jeff song.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He opens most concerts with it, getting by. You hear those first chords, and you know.
Ah, buckaroos, yeah.
You're here for a Jerry Jeff Walker show.
That's right. How many Jerry Jeff Walker shows have you seen in your life? Dare I even ask?
You know what? I actually.
Do you know how many?
I actually track. I have a list that I keep.
Good grief, man.
And I think. I mean, while Phil Fritsch and the full band are close behind in numbers, I think I've been to...
81.
I think it's just under 70 shows.
Okay, that was my guess.
You know, my goal in moving to Texas was to try and see him at least once a quarter, so four times a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've averaged that.
What was the best Jerry Jeff Walker show you ever remember being a part of?
No question.
Wow, you know what?
April 2000, Houston International Festival... It was a Sunday afternoon. I was actually down visiting my girlfriend here, who's now my wife. Hello, right. Emily.
Hello, Emily.
When I saw Jerry Jeff Walker's plane, I postponed my flight back to school. I think I missed some classes on Monday.
Right.
Played like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The sun was kind of low. Just the stage. I was close to the stage. Jerry Jeff was in such a great mood. Gary P. Nunn came out and joined him for songs. It was a combination of the weather, the people I was with.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful
Not
show.
Not super crazy, uncomfortably crowded, just nice enough to where it's a...
It wasn't a green hall, everybody's drunk, pushing against you, sweating on you. It was just a mix of families, great weather, Houston International Festival.
Oh, that's great.
It's just a great festival. I mean, that show was great. You know, I went down to Belize with him.
Oh, did you really? Yeah, his place. Now, does he have a house down there, a ranch? What does he have in Belize?
He has a house down there.
How did he get tied up with the whole Belize deal?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, how long has he had that place down there? That's a very famous...
I think it's been a while. They recorded Cowboy Boots and Bathing Suits down there. Right. Don't know how, but went down there in 98. It was a very small thing. This was before... It's now, you know, 250 people show up. When I went down there, there was about 30 of us, you know, 40 of us.
You go to a show at some little canteen
down
there?
Well, not only
that,
but, you know, we all stayed at this one place down there, and Jerry Jeff, every night after dinner, they kind of... You know, roll out an amp and plugs in and play songs for you. You know, in front of 40 people.
Is that right?
As you're eating your dessert.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That was so great.
Was it expensive? I mean, I'm just curious.
You know, I think it was expensive to stay at the place.
A package deal? Yeah, was it a package deal?
You know, what price do you put on having Jerry Jeff play for you live?
Yeah, people? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if I would pay $500 to ride the bus with Phil Fritsch,
I can only imagine. I can only imagine what Jerry Jeff Walker
$501.
Would get. $510 to see Jerry Jeff Walker. No question about it. So, okay, so the other side. What was the worst Jerry Jeff Walker show out of 70 saw?
No question here. It was his birthday show a few years back. I go every year to, I've probably been the last 8 years.
In Austin. Paramount Theater.
He used to do...
Now, that's kind of a relatively new thing, right? He does the Paramount Theater show every year.
He used to do Broken Spoke Friday night.
Right.
Saturday was the Paramount, and then Sunday was Luckenbach for a while, then they changed it to Green Hall. Now they don't do Friday night anymore. They just do Saturday and Sunday.
For his birthday?
For his birthday weekend.
Okay, right.
And
Jerry
it's
Jeff
like,
Walker.
Kind of like a Woodstock for Jerry Jeff fans. You know, he came out with sometimes he has special guests. One year it was Jimmy Buffett. Amazing show. Jimmy Buffett Jeff on stage together.
Old friends together again.
Well, Jerry Jeff drove Jimmy Buffett to Key West for the first time.
That's right. Took him in, as legend has it.
In an old Packard, and they stopped at every bar between Miami and Key West, and I can only imagine how they made that last, you know, little bit of the drive.
Right. Yeah.
So Jerry Jeff, this, you know, in the past there's been a lot of guests, Chris Wall, Bruce Robinson, Ronnie Kix and Brooks and Dunn and whatever those guys' names
are. They came rolling out one time. Yeah.
And so Jerry Jeff said, well, this year I'm going to do something different. I'm going to sing some songs I want to sing. And, you know, it's a crowd that's, you know, middle-aged and having a few beers and enjoying themselves. And he
decided he was going to educate everybody.
Well, he wanted to play Little Bird, and they wanted to hear Pissing in the Wind.
Right.
So after about a few too many requests, he dropped a few four-letter words, stormed off the stage, and people weren't sure what was going to happen. And eventually he came back out and said, look, I just wanted to play some songs, and there was a thick tension in the air.
Wow. Sold out Paramount?
Oh, sold out Paramount.
He was struggling with what to do.
Yeah, he was struggling. I think someone probably pushed him back on stage. Fine. But,
yeah.
I think, you tell me as an artist, some nights you just...
Sure.
You don't want to be out there. You're just having a bad time. You're sick. Who knows what's going on in your life?
Yeah, that's right. It's hard to get up there and just put on the
big
face.
And it's very public. I mean, it's very, if I work at a cubicle, I can be sick, having a bad day, and I just, look at my computer and I don't have to interact with anybody. But your job is to interact.
And it's a shame for performers as well is, I always talk about the great show or the worst show. Those are the ones people remember.
Yeah.
There's so many in between where everything's just great. And it's almost unfair when you hear about artists and stuff, because we all have bad days, but you're right, it is public.
Yeah.
And there'll be incidences at our shows or something that fans will always refer to. We haven't had anything super crazy huge or anything, but
the fights between Stalley and
something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that will go on, and you're like, look, we played 150 shows last year, all of them were great, and man, we had this one show where that guy got mad because I wouldn't play this song again, which I already played, and so I said something to him, and it was tense. Some people remember that. It's a shame. You're kind of like, gosh, we've had 149 that we just came off without a hitch. Roughly, we played all our songs. Everybody loved it, but this one seems to hang in the air as a black mark on the year or something. So, I can sympathize somewhat with old Jerry Jeff.
Well, let's circle back to another.
Viva!
Another one of the songs on here.
Which one?
Everybody knows. Up Against the Wall, Redneck.
This song is by Ray Wiley Hubbard.
And this is, it's a great song to listen to. Mm-hmm. It's a ubiquitous Jerry Jeff song. There's a great version on, I forget, I think it might be
one of Ray's albums?
No, on one of Jerry Jeff's. I can't believe I'm blanking. A Man Must Carry On.
Yeah.
And there's a couple live songs on the second disc of that. And one of them is Willie Nelson joining them in to spell out the word mother. It's like M is for mud flaps,
right.
O is for oil.
Yeah.
So Willie comes out a little under the influence.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, M is for mud flaps. T is for toenails. E is for cars. R is for everything was
what
off.
Year was that recorded? Was
oh,
it
goodness,
70s?
That was probably mid-70s.
Okay, so Willie may be way out there.
Willie might have been way out there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great, fans like that song.
Sure.
People get into it. London Homesick Blues is the last track on side two.
The great Gary P. Nunn. Sings it on this, right?
He's lead vocals on this.
Now, Jerry Jeff does the song where he sings it a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, too. I think... And true fans are going to get mad at me for not remembering the story, but I think it's they might have said to Gary, sing that song you wrote or something like that, and he just steps up and sings this, and everyone loved it and put it on the album. Before you know it, it's the theme to Austin City Limits, and Jerry Jeff is well known for it. I think Gary P. Nunn's probably a little upset sometimes if people think that's a Jerry Jeff song.
Yeah. Well, it's the curse of the songwriter, I don't know. I met Gary P. Nunn several times. We played with him several times over the years. Couldn't be a nicer guy.
Oh, really nice.
Hanging out with Gary P. Nunn.
Yep.
Really. Boy, what I liked about him is so many guys just get so down on playing guitar. Some of these guys, you never see them playing their guitar or anything. And what I found fascinating, we played a show with Gary P. and David Allan Coe in Galveston one time. Why were we at that show? Wow. Anyway, it was...
A certain crowd element scared me away.
Yeah, yeah. sure enough, I come on the porch and backstage, and there's Gary P. I mean, looking like just like he does in this album. He's just got the circular glasses, the hat.
He's had LASIK now, so
has he?
Those glasses,
really? No glasses?
No.
Well, he still had the round glasses and the hat, and was just had his Telecaster, was just picking and playing, big old ostrich boots, vest. Just looked like he was ready to go on stage. It was like 3 in the afternoon. And just sat there and talked to us and was so cool, man. Never quit playing the guitar. He was just picking around. He's a real old school picker, man.
Yeah.
Just like, he probably sleeps with that damn guitar. It's not like he's just out here kind of like, hey, man, I'm just playing my stuff and getting out of here.
GCG and I'm done, yeah.
Yeah, no, he was just sitting there in his element, man, and really, really nice and complimentary of us. And got up on stage and played a great show.
You look at the musicians in the Lost Gonzo.
Oh, yeah.
Bob Livingston.
Cosmic Bob, is that what they call him?
Cosmic Bob.
Cosmic Bob.
Guy plays the bass, plays the guitar. No question. He probably plays anything you ask. I mean, he spends a lot.
Still with him to this day, right?
Yeah. Interesting story about him. I talked to him after the Do-Si-Do show. He spends a lot of time with going overseas for like Voice of America, or not Voice of Armed Forces.
Oh, yeah.
So he'll go to India. He was leaving this month for Switzerland.
Like entertaining, playing country music?
Just kind of outreach. You know, it's building American goodwill through country music.
Sure.
And he was going to South Africa. I think he was going to Angola. You know, some of the very deep parts of Africa, going to, you know, play his brand of country and Western.
He do his own solo albums and stuff, Livingston,
yeah,
doesn't he?
He has an album out called Mahatma Gandhi and Sitting Bull. He's very influenced by India. He's been over to India a lot.
Right.
Highly recommend that album if people are looking for an album to get. Mahatma Gandhi and Sitting Bull, I think, is the name of the album.
Wow, Cosmic Bob.
Cosmic Bob's got a great voice.
Yeah.
Good album. You know, and names on here like Herb Steiner and Gary P. I mean, these are really talented musicians.
Who have their own bands.
And this is the backup band for Jerry Jeff.
That's amazing, man. 1973, Luke and Bop, Texas, man. Back when it was just the center of this world that you... so joyfully introduced to.
What would I give to be back in Austin, Texas in 1973?
Oh, man. You know, my old guitar player, Landis Armstrong, philosopher, guitarist, entertainer, would tell stories. His dad was Bob Armstrong, who was the, what was he, like the Speaker of the Texas House
something. Oh, yeah.
And was an inventor. If you go to Matzal Rancho, you can still order the Bob Armstrong dip, which is a bowl of chili con queso with a scoop of guacamole in the middle. His greatest legacy is the Bob Armstrong dip. But Bob Armstrong was his age, like early 70s, Austin. And it was just, back then, man, all those musicians and politicians and Daryl Royal and
the writers, Bud Schrake.
All moved in the same circles. There wasn't any, Austin's still like that to some degree. You know, you'll see Lance Armstrong and Bob Schneider hanging out
with
playing
Matthew
pool.
McConaughey.
Yeah, playing pool somewhere. It's just kind of all these different elements, you know. And he said back in the 70s, Bob Armstrong, his dad would, you know, play cards with Willie Nelson and Jerry Jeff Walker. And they just walk around downtown with BB guns and shoot pigeons and just crazy kind of stuff like that. And here they are, all these, a lawyer and a musician, but they've all had some beers. And it's just kind of this... free form. They said, man, it was just Austin in the 70s. It was just a little bit, still lawless to some degree. And, really not until the 80s. Until then, you would be in downtown Austin. You had the big river, of course.
Yep.
And, man, kind of south of the river was just see cattle grazing.
South Congress, yeah.
Well, yes, there'd just be like some farms out there. It wasn't...
no heart of Texas music.
Yeah, no, not yet. Maybe in the 70s it came around, but certainly in the 60s it was like that. My dad went to UT in like the early 60s. And, he said, you know, Threadgills is on North Lamar, the original location.
Yeah.
He goes, man, that was just considered way outside of town. That was like the north that you just drove through you drove through the dark for 15 minutes. But it was kind of a roadside gas station out there in Lamar. Pretty crazy to go look at it now and think about you look at this album, Viva Tolingua, the 70s, Austin, Texas.
It feels like that. You know, this is a soundtrack to that time period.
To that era. And, man, it still is fresh. I still love all those songs, man. They're all just, and you can't be a Texas musician and write your own songs and tour around without Viva Tolingua somehow, whether you want it or not, just by osmosis, working its way into your DNA. I mean, it's just like, dude, you know every song on there. Sangria Wine. I mean, come on. Getting By, Up Against the Wall, London Homesick Blues, Little Bird, I mean, and on and on and on. Well, the great Jerry Jeff Walker. If you don't have any Jerry Jeff Walker, start with Viva Tolingua.
Start with Viva Tolingua for your 70s influence. Go with Night After Night. It's a live album recorded at the Birchmere in Virginia for kind of a later, early 90s.
Later Walker, right.
80s, you can kind of skip that. If you're a real fan, you try and find... like Cow Jazz or something like that, which is a little more of the 80s music. Too Old to Change, Oh boy, go to Jerry Jeff's website and you can see the list of, I don't know, 30 albums the guy's recorded.
He's made, yeah.
Oh, hopefully, yeah. Hopefully when Phil's 65, we look back at a 30 album discography. And
that's right. Well, I'm already halfway there, I think.
Give the same reverence to Phil Comes Alive as we do today to Viva Terralingua.
I hope so, man. I can only hope. Well, thank you, fans, for listening. For listening at philpritchett.com and radiofreetexas.org. And my thanks especially to Kevin Haggard for once again coming in from Houston, Texas, to share his thoughts on how he came to know this thing as Texas music, his thoughts on Jerry Jeff Walker, and insight into the technological world and the future of music. Thank you very much, sir.
Phil, I thank you very much for the invite. This has been a great 2 weeks driving up back and forth, and hope to do it again one of these days soon.
We will do it very, very soon. Well, folks, as always, call me, 817-733-5256. Book us for whatever party you got going on. New Year's. I think we still got New Year's open. Looking for that New Year's show.
What about
where's it
going to
be?
What about Houston?
Yeah, man.
My backyard. The there you go.
I'm open. We're open. Also, come record at Trinidad World Recording. We do all kinds. One song, a concept album, whatever have you. Come to record at Trinidad. Phil@philpritchett.com. Shoot me an email. Let us know what we need to be talking about on the podcast. It all runs on you, the fan, participating and taking part. That's what keeps the whole machine going. For Kevin Haggard, I am Phil Pritchett, P2, signing off here on yet another edition of the podcast. Be good to each other out there, and we will see you same time next week.
This song is by Ray Wiley Hubbard.
He was born in Oklahoma. His wife's name, Betty Lou Thelma Liz. He's not responsible for what he's doing, 'cause his mother made him what he is. And it's up against the wall, redneck mother. Mother. Sit down with that wild turkey liquor. He drives a 57 GMC pickup truck. He's got a gun rack, goat rope, and he's love to stick. And it's up against the wall, redneck mother.
Haggard. E is for eggs, and R is for